show and all the other shows that are on WCWP.org is you can go to WCWP.org, but they have a great app. So you just go to your app on your phone and apps on the phone, and you just put in WCWP Radio. Is that right, Ryan? And you just get it right there, and all you have to do is hit on to that show, and it comes right up. So whatever is live will play right on your phone. So that's the best way. So my name's Rebecca Miller, and I will be your guest host today for Project Independence in You, covering for John Ryan. And our show today is really a great show. We always have great shows because Christina Liu is a radio show producer, and she always pulls together amazing shows with amazing guests each week. So today, our co-host is Jerry Berkson. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. How are you? How's everybody?
We're all doing well. Jerry is a resident of New Hyde Park in the town of North Hempstead, and we just found out is also a social studies teacher and likes to do his research, and you taught in Great Neck right here in the town as well. So we're, you know, really happy to have you as a co-host on the radio show, and I know you had mentioned that you were also the interviewee at one point, and then to you as a Project Independence member, a resident, and of the town of North Hempstead. So, and now you're assisting the show. So we are grateful to you and volunteer and all that you do for Project Independence. So thanks for being here today.
Pleasure to be here.
Great. Our first guest is Dorota Nigro, and Dorota authored a book, Not Just a Name, and we're going to talk at length with Dorota
in just a number.
Not just a number. And we'll be talking with Dorota in just a few moments. After Dorota, we're going to be speaking with Stephen Markowitz, who is chairman of the Holocaust Memorial and Tolerance Center of Nassau County. And then, of course, from 11 a.m. to 11:30 will be Old Time Radio, Boston Blocky Boxer's Murder Case, that first aired October 18th, 1945. All right. And then, of course, Talk of the Town with the fabulous Christina Liu, who is the Senior Citizen Program Development Specialist for the Town of North Hempstead's Department of Services for the Aging, and also the producer of this radio show who just pulls these shows together every week of the year. And we're coming close to our 8th anniversary, so I'm sure we'll be talking a little bit about that. So let's get right to it. Dorota, first of all, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me.
And, you know, I've just been reviewing not just the book, which I didn't have an opportunity to read, but I know that Jerry has read it thoroughly. And we're going to go over, you know, the book and your story. But first, tell us a little bit about yourself. Very interesting. You are an immigrant.
Yes, I'm an immigrant. I came here legally. I entered the Kennedy Airport, and they handed me my green card. And moved to Bergen County, New Jersey.
Where'd you come from?
I came from Poland.
Okay.
Was born in Poland 10 years after the war. So I lived under the Soviet-occupied country until I left Poland in 72. So I was about 17, 18 years old.
Okay.
Came to United States, came legally, lived with my aunt and my uncle, my mother and my sister.
What was that experience like coming over from as a teenager?
As a teenager, I didn't have to go to school. I didn't have to take the hard classes in math and physics and chemistry. And I felt like I was going on vacation. But I didn't know that vacation was going to last 47 years and more. And I built a life here.
Right. Okay. And then you moved in with an aunt and uncle?
Yes. My aunt and uncle didn't have children. And they decided to bring us over here. My parents wanted us to have a better life.
And where did you go? Where in New York?
Moved straight from Kennedy Airport. We went over George Washington Bridge and ended up in Dumont, New Jersey.
Oh, okay. So right over the GW Bridge.
I went to Dumont High School, graduated Bergen Community College, Montclair State College, and graduated with a degree in German and Russian.
Wow.
So I was a teacher, too.
Impressive. Yeah, so both Jerry and Dorota are teachers in different fields.
Well, I was a teacher, but right now I'm still with a major airline.
Well, you're always a teacher, right? Even
yes.
You just might not be teaching at the moment, but that's your degree. Yeah. And, you know, we're thankful for all the hard work that you put in and, you know, start to educate as well. You're an educator and a teacher, and that's a great profession. So let's talk a little bit about the story and how and what happened. I mean, I read a little bit about the history of, you know, I saw that your husband passed away 3 weeks after retirement.
3 months.
3 months after retirement. Okay. So, I mean, that's not, so I'm sure there's a lot behind it. And, you know, why don't you tell us a little bit about his story? And I know he worked for the MTA. He was a mechanic.
He was a diesel engine mechanic, diesel engine specialist, worked for New York City Transit, largest transit transportation in the country, for 28 years. I guess the job it was a great job with pension, with medical, 100% medical, a lot of days off. But the job offered something else, offered the inhalation of the diesel fumes.
Right.
And that's what killed him. He retired at the age of 57. A month later, he was diagnosed with lung cancer stage 4, inoperable. And we went into shock.
So he didn't retire because he was sick?
No, he didn't know at that point. When he started coughing in March, probably about 6 months before he got diagnosed with lung cancer, it was a winter time, was cold. He had a little cough, went to the doctor, got the medication, came back, cough came back as well. And that's when we started noticing something was wrong, and we started going to specialists.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, he retired at the end of August in 2011. A month later, he was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. And he lasted only 3 months.
And so the journey began for you and him and your family.
Yeah, there was a difficult 3 months because he was home. He was in the hospital, back home, back to the hospital constantly. And the illness progressed worse and worse and worse. And we learned on December 9th that his cancer came from the environment, which was diesel fumes inhalation on the job.
All right. So how did you find that out? Did you have suspicions right away, or was this kind of like, oh, that makes sense?
Well, beginning, I didn't know at all for about 2 months. Maybe he knew and wasn't telling me.
Yeah.
But I was at the point that I had to go to the doctor to get something to calm me down, because I was going to sleep. I couldn't sleep. I was waking up still thinking about the same thing. I was getting exhausted. My system was going running down and down. And we decided to see doctor in our Rockville Center, Dr. Kessler. Older gentleman, he agreed to see us, and the first thing he said when he walked into the office, he looked at me and told me, "You girl, get yourself a good lawyer." And my eyes just opened up, and a question was, why do I need a lawyer? And he says, what your husband has, it's environmental. And I still didn't get it. I said, environmental what? My husband sitting next to me says, honey, don't you see it? It's diesel fumes. From that moment on, my personality changed. Now I wasn't there to help him. I was on a mission to go after his company.
So once you got this information, and did you find that were there other people in his situation?
Yes, at that moment everything came like in place. I realized why he wasn't home, and I could smell diesel fumes on his clothes. Very often, he didn't bring his uniforms to be washed at home. A couple of times he did. He washed it separately, and I found like a black ring inside the wash machine. So there was the suit that accumulated on the inside of the machine. My husband used to go to a lot of viewings and funerals. Every time he went with the suit and the slacks, I said, where are you going? And he goes, I'm going to a viewing. I'll be home a little late. I'll be going a little late. So every time he said that, it became almost a joke between us. Because I used to say, honey, come on, another viewing and funeral? You probably have a woman in Manhattan. So pack the bags and the door is open. And it became a joke.
Yeah.
But the joke was on me when he passed away, and I had 200 or 300 men at the viewing, and the church was filled with MTA employees. The cleaners, the bus drivers, the mechanics, the bosses. The church looked like it was Christmas.
Mm.
And that's when I realized he wasn't the only one.
Mm.
I said, these men are dying. It's like never-ending funeral procession. And after he passed away, I started noticing that his friends who passed away after him, now they're dying.
Yeah.
And I started going to their viewings and funerals. I couldn't take it anymore. And that's when I knew I had to fight.
Yeah. Well, so you became, you know, an advocate. Are you, because I have not read this book, I wish I had the opportunity a little bit more
it's
time.
Okay.
But as you know, were you alone in your fight? Did you have help? How did you start? Where did you start?
I got at that point when I learned from the doctor on the way home, when we were in a car, my husband, I think that's triggered, the learning where it came from, that came from diesel exhaust. And then being in a car with him, his question was, his statement to me was, I'm ready. Because he learned, the doctor told him that he'll be lucky if he makes the springtime. So when he said that, I got angry at that point. I just looked at him and said, you ready? Do you think this is about you? This is a last mission on earth. When I'm done with the company, I said, they're going to remember you and every single man before you and everything, every man after you. Well, my husband just looked at me and he knew I was going to fight his company. He told me that I'm crazy. He told me, you never win. They have legal departments. They have lawyers coming out of woodwork. He said, it's not worth it, honey. I'm just a number to them. I'm just a number. Well, then anger came. I turned back to him. I said, do you think this? You're just a number? When I'm done with you, they're going to remember every single number they lost. And he says, you might not be here to see it, but I promise it's going to be done. And I went after his company.
I bet he believed you.
Well,
I get the feeling he did believe you had
he
that.
He knew I was going to do it because he knew that whatever I want to get, I will accomplish it. It might take me a little time, but I will do it. But I never thought, well, I knew I was going to win, but I never thought that New York City Transit would be so negligent in a compensation case like mine. I mean, this compensation case is this. Bad backs, knees, hips, everything, they get hurt. They file compensation lawsuits.
Mm-hmm.
But a compensation lawsuit that it's based on the death of an employee, I think their lawyer should have been more careful about it and be on top of it. But I guess they're negligent in the legal department as well as they're negligent in the ventilation system. And knowing the company, since I learned from my husband, I used to tease him about his company because I was born in Poland in a socialist country, and my husband was telling me about his company. I said, Anthony, you don't have to tell me about your company, nothing about your company. Your company's like little Poland in a democracy. Well, old Poland, now Poland is democratic. I used to say it's like a little socialist country in the north. Oh, you're crazy. Well, I knew there's so much negligence in that company, which is a government-subsidized company, just like living in Poland. If you go after them, you win. The only big difference for me was I was in this country. I was in a country, democratic country. So fighting MTA wasn't difficult at all. But I had lawyers, Gray and Gray. They located in Farmingdale in New York, and I knew I need the legal advice and the legal support.
Okay, so we actually don't have this 15 minutes are over for the first segment. When we come back, Jerry, maybe we'll delve into the book. I know you have a lot of marks in there, a lot of questions, a lot of things you kind of want to talk to, you know, to Dorota about. So we will be back. We're speaking with Dorota Nigro, who is an author of Not Just a Number. We'll be right back.